Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Iris Yim, founder and president of Sparkle Insights. Welcome, Iris.
Well, thank you, Mario, for having me.
Yeah, and we were right before thinking if you've been on before. So I'll have to check after the podcast, but if you are, you'd be one of the first two-time guests. So what an honor.
Thank you.
Awesome. So we've known each other for a while in the market research industry, and we've done some we've been lucky enough to work with you and your company, Sparkle Insights. But I've never really, I don't think we've talked much about your entrepreneurial journey. Would love to hear more about that before we dive into your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wish I had a better story to tell you, but the reality is that the research company that I used to work for, they decided to shut down their multicultural research department back in 2013. So I was out of a job. That's actually the best thing that's ever happened to me because I decided it was, you know, the right time to strike out on my own and hang out my shingle. I had that idea for a while, but just never had the courage to quit my job, right? So it was the right push for me.
Okay. So see, that is a good story. A lot of the greatest companies were started like that. And so I was going to ask you what made you decide to start a company versus go look for another job, but it sounds like you already had this idea.
Right. Yeah, there was another reason, because I have seen just over the span of my career in market research for 2 decades, I've seen a lot of senior researchers in VP positions got laid off in the later stage of their life. So I thought to myself, I never want to, you know, get myself in that situation. So I thought, you know, it would be a safer option for me to have my own practice instead of, you know, worrying about getting laid off later in my life stage, and would still have to start my independent consulting research practice anyway. So I wanted to start early. And once I got into it, never looked back. So so far, so good.
That's great. I love that perspective, because so often, and I'm sure you hear this as well as an entrepreneur, like people ask you, like, aren't you scared? Aren't you worried? I think there's a perception that, well, it's a correct perception, but there's a perception that it's riskier to be an entrepreneur. However, as you point out, at least with an entrepreneur, you know what's in the pipeline. As an employee, you don't have that visibility, and you can get laid off anytime, right? So, like, I don't know. There's pros and cons to both.
Well, there is certainly a lot of news of layoffs lately. Yeah. So I just feel that, you know, being an entrepreneur, you are in better control of your destiny in terms of the strategic directions and also the types of services and products that you offer. And in my case, I definitely feel that I have better quality control, because I'm involved in research design and oversee project execution. So I know what I'm selling and I know what I'm delivering.
Yeah, well, congratulations. I mean, so you hit 10 years this year then, right?
Yes.
That's pretty incredible. I think it's something, I mean, very few businesses make it to the 10-year mark. So congratulations.
Thank you. Well, Think Now has been around for a while.
Yeah, I think we're...
That's also very impressive.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we're year 12, which is kind of, it's the longest job I've ever had.
Well, that's because it's your own company.
Right. Awesome. So good to know. So tell us, so Sparkle Insights, how did you come up with that name?
Well, I want it to be broader than just research or just multicultural research. You know, I want it to be something that can make a bigger impact. It would be the spark of something, spark of new ideas, spark of, you know, business changes or impact. And also, I think it's it has a little bit, you know, to do with my personal my personality. You know, it's pretty sparkly. So yeah, hence Sparkle Insights.
I love it. And so you touched on it a little bit. You wanted it to be more than insights. Like, what's your key differentiator in the market research space? Why do your clients work with you versus other companies?
So a lot of clients that come to Sparkle Insights because of our multicultural expertise, but I have to say that we think of ourselves, you know, first and foremost market researchers. You know, we also conduct some general market research and also international research, but majority of our projects are multicultural. So there are two core strengths that we are very proud of. One is designing and executing multiple segment research in a very efficient way, with key insights and cultural nuances, you know, very important. For example, we can turn around a multiple segment online bulletin board study, including moderation and report in a matter of a week. The way that we do it is, for example, if we do 4 online bulletin boards, Caucasian, Hispanic, African-American, and Asian, we have multiple moderators, you know, moderating and also writing the report live. So we will each collaborate on a Google Sheet. The column, each column would be each segment, and the rows will be questions. And we will download the findings of the previous day on a daily basis. And upon conclusion of moderation, then I would develop key insight and also the PowerPoint report based on the Google Sheet. And also, you know, of course, have my research partners check the report and the key insights. And yeah, we can turn around the report in a matter of 3 days if the client is in a hurry, but no longer than a week for sure.
Wow, you're making us look bad. That's
well, you know, sometimes, you know, clients want everything like, you know, yesterday, right?
And I was going to ask you, like, what's your strong suit or preference, like quant or qual? But it sounds like you do both.
We do both. Yeah, we do both qualitative and quantitative. And depending on the research objectives and also, you know, the timeline, client's preference, you know, sometimes it could be a survey, but we build in quite a number of open-ended questions to add context, you know, or it could be like the example that I just gave, because, I mean, if you do multiple online bulletin boards, if you recruit 30 people per board, then it's, you know, 4 boards, that's 120 people. That's a pretty sizable sample that can give you some, meaningful charts, right? And plus all the rich insights from the online bulletin board discussion. But anyways, another core strength is our Asian research expertise. We have in-house staff and we have bilingual and bicultural staff that, you know, speak Mandarin, Cantonese, Korean, and Vietnamese, and which I don't think a lot of research companies offer. Having in-language capabilities is important for Asian research because 2/3 of Asians in the U.S. are foreign-born. And for some of the segments, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese, 40% of them, they are not English proficient. So it's important to include foreign-born and native language speaking Asians in your research design and research execution. And we conduct all the analysis in the native language. For example, if you conduct a survey in Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese, and there are open-ended questions, we do not translate the verbatims into English and then code them. I guarantee you lose 90% of the insights that way. So yeah, we stick to the native language.
That's incredible. And I mean, that's I think many of the projects we've worked with, like, we lean on you as an expert in the Asian market and appreciate that. And a question came to mind. So a kind of a debate that's been happening in multicultural research, I don't know if you're aware of, but like, it's kind of questioning this idea of the Hispanic market. In other words, that the Hispanic market doesn't exist, that, you know, there comes from 23 different countries of origin, different generations levels, and that we should stop, you know, calling U.S. Hispanics a segment. Although I would argue, you know, I think there's enough there to call it a market, in that there's a shared language, in general, like a shared religion and values, despite it being different countries of origin. And of course, there's nuance there. However, you look at the Asian market, it's much more fragmented, right? Like you just mentioned, your team represents four different languages. There's hundreds of Asian languages. There isn't a shared religion that usually comes with values. I guess, what's your perspective on that question? Is there, would you say there's an Asian market, or do you tell clients you should look at it by country of origin? I'm just curious.
Oh yeah, of course. That's a valid question. In fact, you know, it is very diverse and fragmented. And plus, you know, the population size is much smaller compared to Hispanic, right?
In the U.S., yeah.
Right,
yeah.
In the U.S. The U.S., that's correct. In the U.S., that's about 7% of the U.S. total population. So it is one of the barriers, you know, for a lot of advertisers to even, you know, think about marketing to Asians in the U.S. So I think that, you know, it depends on your brand strategy. It depends on your business objectives. There are two ways to look at it. I would say the most important segmentation when it comes to marketing to Asians in the U.S. is U.S. born versus foreign born, because they have very different identities, very different history. So, but again, you know, 2/3 of foreign born. So if you, let's say you want to focus on the U.S. born, then I think a Pan-Asian and in culture, not necessarily in language, you know, let's say cultural relevant, you know, content in English and Pan-Asian, you know, campaign would be appropriate. But if you want to, let's say your products and services are more oriented or, you know, more suitable for the foreign born Asians, let's say telecom, right? Let's say remittance, right? So if you want to reach the foreign born, then I would say definitely going by segment, and the largest segments are Chinese, Asian, Indian, Filipino, and Vietnamese and Korean. So depending on your, I guess, business objectives.
No, that's a really... that's a good distinction. I haven't heard anyone break it down that way. And so thank you. And I think that's a good segue to your involvement with the Asian American Advertising Federation, 3AF. It's an organization we rely on for insights. How did you get involved? I know you're a board member. I believe you're vice president. Like, how did you become involved, and how does that intersect with your work at Sparkle Insights?
Yeah, so I've been involved in the organization for a long time. The beginning of it was because the research company that I used to work for was a member. So after I started my own practice, I continued my involvement. Personally, I think it's important to get involved in industry or organizations such as the 3AF or Hispanic Marketing Council, or AIM, that stands for Alliance for Inclusive and Multicultural Marketing. It's affiliated with the ANA, Association of National Advertisers. So getting involved in industry organizations allows me to think on an industry level, not just, you know, business level. Yeah. So to and helps me keep up with industry trends and issues, and also very importantly, allows me to contribute to the larger marketing and advertising community.
Yeah, that's great. And I know you're doing a presentation coming up. Well, first tell us more about there's like a yearly event, right? What is the idea there, and what is that about?
So the annual conference of the 3F is coming up at the end of May. It is called the Asian Marketing Summit, and it usually encompasses all aspects of Asian marketing. To give you some examples of some of the sections from last year, so there were sections on the Asian media landscape, Asian consumer deep dive. Mark Bland of HIS Market gave a very insightful presentation on the power of Asian automotive consumers. There are case studies. There were sections on intersection of DEI and marketing. And Jeff Yang talked about his new book on the influence of Asian Americans on pop culture. So as you can see, a variety of different topics on different aspects of Asian marketing. So so in fact, your partner Ryan and I are going to talk about how to conduct Asian research. Talked about earlier, there are some of the key considerations that we need to keep in mind when designing research studies for Asians in the U.S. because of the complexity of it, and also because the market research infrastructure is not built to conduct multicultural research. I'm sure you are well aware of it. So we will have a session on that.
You know what? So I'm aware of it, but our listeners may not be. Talk about that, because that's so interesting, and I don't think I've had someone on where I've got to discuss that. Like, what you correctly pointed out, that market research really isn't well equipped to conduct multicultural market research. What does that mean to you, like, when you say that?
Well, to begin with, how do we source sample for surveys, right? 99% of the time, we source sample from online panels. There are lots and lots of online panels out there. But a lot of them, they recruit respondents or panelists, in English from general market websites, publications, and as a result, multicultural consumers, as Hispanic, African American, Asian, they are underrepresented on those panels. If you rely on online panels for your surveys, then the incidence rate for multicultural consumers will be very low, and also the sample will not be representative.
100%. Yeah. So I'm going to share something with you, even though you didn't ask, but it's relevant. So I actually got my start. I'm not a market researcher by trade. Not now that I've been in the industry, I obviously can, but I'm a marketer. And I started digital marketing at MSN Latino microsites. And I moved into market research with a company called Garcia Research. They had a job posting on helping them build their online division, which consisted of a panel. When I applied for the job, I had no idea what a panel was, but it was close. Like, I was leaving my previous position because the drive was just terrible. But this was like in my backyard pretty much. So I did some, just literally Googled what a panel was, did some research, and I was like, wow, this looks pretty easy. Like, I could build a panel and get to pay people to take a survey, right? Way easier than what I was doing, marketing and trying to get traffic to websites people may or may not care about, where as a panel, I can actually give them cash. So I put together a plan as part of my interview, and I got the position. Flash forward, within 2 years, that became the number one revenue generator for that company. And that is what led Garcia Research to get purchased. And Roy actually hired me, and we didn't want to go along for the ride. And so we started Think Now. But my claim to fame, I mean, and it's kind of, it feels weird saying it, was literally, organically creating a U.S. Hispanic panel.
That's very impressive.
It sounds impressive, but it's not, because I literally just thought, hey, how can I build a website that my mom will sign up for?
Right? Oh, and wow. That's great insight.
But it's kind of crazy to think about that. Like, no one, like, even till this day, right? Like, people just take that English experience and translate it to whatever language that they're trying to reach or whatever. And like, that's the extent of it. They don't think about the cultural aspect of it, right? With US Hispanics, there's a heightened sense of privacy concerns. And we find for first generation panelists, right, immigrants, they don't want the relationship to just be emails. There needs to be a sense that there's a real person there. But all in all, that's just to say, to your point, like, Sample is not built, and it's still not. You know, flash forward, I joined in the market research industry in 2009, 2010, and we're still not doing that. It's like we're focused on the technology aspect of it, and we're not focused on the human aspect of it. And I'm sure you've experienced this. The past 3 years, fraud has been rampant in our industry. Right. Like, that's a whole other issue, but I don't know. It's interesting that we're kind of still dealing with that.
Yeah. Congratulations on building and having your own panel, yes. Because I know, you know, how much work that is.
Yeah. No. And you know, we've started recruiting Asian American Store panel, but it's just English only, right? Because I guess similar to brand, right? It's a big undertaking to have, you have to have multiple panels for one segment. That is, I think there's a business opportunity for technology market research companies to, you know, can we build something that is easy for us to create multiple panels in multiple languages with different experiences? It's not really set up for that right now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I hope that there, you know, will be something for us that we can rely on, because for us, we also, you know, out of necessity, sometimes we roll up our sleeves and do our own recruitment of respondents. It's very hard. Yeah.
We often have to
use multiple panels and also our own recruitment and, you know, working with recruiters to piece together the sample.
Can without giving too much away about the presentation that you'll be discussing, can you share some highlights, maybe like top three kind of takeaways for people that might not be able to make it to the annual conference but want to know, what should I be thinking about if I'm going to conduct Asian research in the U.S.?
Oh, okay. So for that one, it's going to be a panel discussion with Rai. So we do have, you know, some questions and answer prepared. You know, for example, I think one of the biggest, you know, blind spots, marketers and researchers have, you know, who are not familiar about the Asian market. It's just, you know, the fact that two-thirds of Asians in the U.S. are foreign-born. And from there, there are a lot of, you know, implications, right? So you have to have your questionnaire available in multiple languages, or when you're conducting focus groups, you know, some of the focus groups need to be in language, you know, and also, you know, how to conduct analysis. Of course, not everybody has a proper budget to conduct Asian research properly, but what are some of the, you know, workarounds? But still, you know, making sure that you have some representativeness in your sample. So that's what we'll be talking about. But I will also be doing a presentation on a multicultural study conducted by the Hispanic Marketing Council, and 3F is a sponsor of the study. And I understand that Think Now is also one of the sponsors.
Yeah.
So And I want to share a little bit about that study. It is a study that examines, you know, teens and adults, their views of core identity, their values, you know, and questions like, you know, how they feel about their current stage of life, how they deal with stress, or, you know, how they define success, and different topics, you know, issues that they care about, work and money, the relationship with friends, and lots of questions about online streaming and media consumption. And it also has a substantial sample, like more than 1,000 based per segment for Caucasian, Hispanic, African American, and Asian, so that we can look across, you know, all these major segments to see whether there are any significant differences. And one third of the sample is teens, you know, 13 to 17, so I'm particularly curious about this segment, right? Because they are the multicultural majority generation. They grew up in a very different time compared to you and me. Yeah. Right? Grew up using social media. So yeah, I'm curious about the findings. I'm still waiting on the data, but I will be presenting on some of the topics, because it's a very long questionnaire, lots of topics, right? So I'll probably be talking about core identity and media consumption, and the rest of the topics will be released via webinars later in the year.
No, it's so interesting, right? And I love seeing the data coming out from younger generations, you know, because to your point, like something that occurred to me, my kids are 9 and 7. You know, when they were born, it was, you know, the Obama years. So it's interesting. Donald Trump was their first white president. So they, right, like they grew up in an era where they only knew a black president. And I just thought that was like such a big insight, right? Like, whereas for me, right, like it was the opposite. It was the first. So I just think of like the generation, and of course, like you said, they're the first minority majority generation. And I think something we don't talk about either that's interesting is the fastest growing segment in younger generations is multiracial. You know, and you know, that's super interesting as well. When, you know, because we talk about code switching, like I think for second, third generation Asian Americans and Hispanic Americans, depending on what we're buying, you know, our background may influence us or not. It's going to be really interesting to see the multiracial aspect, how that affects buying trends.
Yeah, I think we
should
do a study on its own on this topic.
Right. Yeah, that would be really interesting. Awesome. So, we're almost at our time, believe it or not. But before we stop our conversation, wanted to talk about some milestones. Like, what are you proud of accomplishing in 2022, and what are you looking forward to this year? Even though it's already April, which is crazy.
There were two projects that came to mind last year. So Sparkle Insights partnered with the Filipino Channel on a multicultural study that examines post-pandemic consumer behavior and media consumption among different cultural segments of Caucasian, Hispanic, African American, and Asian. It's one of the few studies that, you know, examines these topics and with a breakdown, you know, on those segments. And then another study is we actually published a few reports based on the some of the sections at the 3AF Asian Marketing Summit last year. As I just shared with you, there the conference covers a lot of topics, but I personally, because I am one of the conference organizers, I always feel that it's a pity that we spend so much time organizing the conference, but once it's done, like nothing is left. Like nothing has ever been written about the country. Yeah. And there's so much great information and insight, you know, that for people, I guess, who are interested in this space, information that you cannot find anywhere else. So I asked my staff to write comprehensive recap of the, you know, the sections and design the report. It is up on our website under Insights. You know, if you're interested,
look at that.
It's free, yeah. You know, to download. Yeah. So I just feel that that's a helpful resource and insights for anyone interested in this space. In terms of 2023, obviously, I will continue to be involved in the 3F and also at the Alliance of Inclusive and Multicultural Marketing of the ANA. And also, we have a new strategic direction for the company, helping Asia-based companies, you know, understand U.S. consumers, because I have been conducting market research in the U.S. for 2 decades, so I'm very familiar with this market, and all the teams, you know, we're bicultural and bilingual, so I feel that we are in a unique position, you know, to help Asia-based companies who are interested in entering the U.S., you know, help them understand U.S. consumers and also navigate through some of the potential pitfalls. And also personally, I am helping a nonprofit. In addition to my involvement in the 3F and AIM, it's called Adopt an Inmate. There is, well, a unique issue in the U.S., the mass incarceration, right? I can go on and on about that. But if you can just Google that, you know, you'll get lots of information. But back to this organization, it is a fledgling nonprofit that was established in 2015. It's self-funded by a few volunteers. And what they do is they connect supportive adopters with inmates to help them with rehabilitation and also facilitate a transition back to society. It's a very small team, but from the beginning, you know, since the establishment of the organization in 2015, and they have been able to make over 2,500 matches. But because of the limited capacities that they have, there are more than 6,000 people, inmates on the wait list to be matched. And so it needs a lot of help with the marketing and fundraising. So I'm helping them with that. And also, I'm also doing a pro bono study for them to help them evaluate their website. And I just I'm also an adopter and a donor. I just have to say that it's a very rewarding experience. So thank you so much for allowing me to talk about this.
No, it's great, and thank you so much for joining. I feel like we've been working together for a while, so it was really cool to hear more of your story. If people want to learn more about your work or connect with you, what's the best way to find you online?
So I am on LinkedIn, and the handle is, I believe, linkedin.com/sparkleinsight. My email is iris@sparkleinsight, with S, as in Sam, at the end, plural, so sparkleinsights.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining, Iris, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.